This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Exodus. Please open your Bibles and let's join Pastor Sandy in the book of Exodus, chapters 12 through 14.
We're in Exodus chapter 12. Every year now for the last 3,450 years, Jews all over the world have celebrated the ancient feast called Passover. Jewish families join in a Seder, or in an order or ceremony that revolves around a meal. And on that night, they remember the events that are recorded in Exodus chapter 12. During the Passover meal, there is a moment when the youngest child in the family approaches the father, and he asks the father four questions. He asks first, "Why is this night distinguished from all other nights? On this night, we eat only unleavened bread." Then he asks, "On all other nights, we eat any kind of herbs, but on this night, only bitter herbs. Why?" Thirdly, he asks, "On all other nights, we do not dip," or dip the vegetables in the salt water, "but tonight, we dip twice. Why?" And then lastly, he says, "On this night, we recline in our chairs at the table. Why?" And then the father uses those four questions as a springboard to recount the story that we're going to read about tonight here in Exodus chapter 12. God instituted the Passover because he wanted the events that are recorded in this chapter remembered by every succeeding Hebrew generation, remembered even by you and I here tonight. Well, verse 1 begins, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, 'This month shall be your beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you.' Now the next day, the Hebrews would leave Egypt, and 400 years of harsh bondage would be over. It would mark a new beginning for Israel. They would be free. This was so monumental that God altered the calendar to mark its significance. Prior to their deliverance, the first month on the Jewish calendar was in the fall. In what is our September, October, it was called the month of Tishri. Now, God says it's to be celebrated, the new year is to be celebrated in the spring at this event in the month of Nisan. Today, Jews recognize both New Years, incidentally. Tishra is the first month on their civil calendar, and Nisan is the first month on the sacred or the religious calendar. Now, as we study through the Passover, I hope you'll remember Paul's words. These are so important. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 7, Paul said, "For indeed Christ, our Passover, was sacrificed for us." And in a million ways, the Passover is a vivid type of Jesus Christ. It foreshadows the freedom that he brings when we give our lives to him, when he enters into our lives. And here is a good example of this typology, the fact that the calendar itself was altered. As the Passover launched a new day for Israel, the work of Jesus marks a new day in world history. Sparks a change in our calendar as well. It's interesting, Pope Gregory replaced the distinction Anno Mundi, or the year of the world, with Anno Domini, or the year of the Lord, and even to this day, we mark our years accordingly. Gets the abbreviation AD. Isn't it interesting that rather than date the years back to creation as they did before Christ, Western countries today count their years from the birth of Christ, from the year of our Lord. Jesus, too, has altered our calendar. Well, in verse 3, God tells Moses, "Speak to all the congregation of Israel, saying, 'On the 10th day of this month, every man shall take for himself a lamb, according to the house of his father, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next to his house take it according to the number of the persons. According to each man's need, you shall make your count for the lamb.'" Years later, the rabbis specified that you needed at least 10 people per lamb. And if you had more than 20 people at the Seder, then a second lamb was also required. So it was 10 people per lamb, 20, and you have to sacrifice another lamb. Verse 5, your lamb shall be without blemish, a male of the first year. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. So, on the 10th of Nisan, a lamb was chosen to be sacrificed. Incidentally, this is the same day, 4 days actually before Passover, that Jesus rode his donkey down the Mount of Olives to the cheers of the crowd. You know, the Jews thought that they were welcoming a king. In reality, they were also choosing a Passover lamb, according to Exodus 12. He says, now you shall keep it until the 14th day of the same month, or the Passover day. Then the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it at twilight. 4 days later, on the Passover, the lamb was supposed to be taken to the tabernacle and sacrificed to God. Jesus was crucified on the day of Passover. We know that. And he died, incidentally, just before twilight. Verse 7 tells us, and they shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and on the lintel of the houses where they eat it. And on that night in Egypt, the blood of the lamb was spread on the doorposts and on the thresholds of each of the homes of the Hebrews, the people who believed in God's promise. Also that night, they shall eat the flesh on that night, roasted in fire, with unleavened bread and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Remember, the unleavened bread was a symbol of their faith. They were leaving Egypt the next day and therefore didn't have time for the bread to rise. They didn't even put the leaven in it. It was a symbol of faith. The bitter herbs were a reminder of the 400 years of harsh and bitter bondage that they had experienced. Verse 9, do not eat it raw nor boil it at all with water, but roast it in fire, its head with its legs and its entrails. You shall let none of it remain until morning, and what remains of it until morning you shall burn with fire. In other words, this sacrifice was to be totally and completely consumed. No leftovers. This is why Jesus died such a horrific death. Jesus gave his all on the cross. He was totally consumed. There was nothing left over of his sacrifice. Jesus paid it all. He paid the full penalty of our sin. He says, and thus you shall eat it, with a belt on your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, you shall eat it in haste. No need to put the cold cuts in the fridge. Just get ready to leave. These Jews believed that they would leave Egypt the next day, so they spent that night in their boots. Their bags were packed. Their staff was in their hand. They believed that deliverance was coming the next day. Moses said of the meal that they were eating, it is the Lord's Passover, for I will pass through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. Notice, even the firstborn of the animals will die. And against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. The judgment on Egypt was a direct assault by God on the different idols of the Egyptians. Each plague, in a sense, called out another Egyptian deity and showed God's superiority over that Egyptian idol. And even this last plague that is about to come, the death of the firstborn, was an assault against the Egyptian gods. They believed that Pharaoh's firstborn, his heir, was also considered to be a god. And so God is showing his superiority even over this last Egyptian god, the Pharaoh himself. And note, the Hebrews were as vulnerable to this last plague as the Egyptians. You know, we discussed that even Israel, while in Egypt, stooped to worship the foreign gods of the Egyptians. There were a few plagues that God allowed to bypass the Hebrews living in Goshen, but not this one. Death is going to come on Israel as well as the Egyptians unless they take advantage of the remedy that God prescribes for them in verse 13. He says, now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you. Thus the name Passover. And the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. Now understand, their salvation had absolutely nothing to do with the purity of the people that were in the house. In fact, if you were a moral person and you assumed that judgment would pass over you because of your goodness, well, say goodbye to your big brother. He's going to die. Death is going to strike. No, salvation came to the folks, no matter how pure or impure they happened to be, but it came to the folks who knew they needed the blood and took the time and made the effort to apply the blood to the doorposts and to the thresholds of their house. And thus they trusted in God's promise to accept that blood as the payment for their sin. And this is how eternal destinies get decided today. This is the means of salvation even as we talk about it today. If you trust in your own merit, no matter how moral or how good or how righteous you might think you are, you're a goner, friend. It's not going to save you. Judgment will strike your house. Death will come. But if you trust in the blood of Jesus, if you apply the blood of the sacrifice, the blood of the Passover lamb, our Passover, Jesus Christ, to the doorposts and to the thresholds of your heart, then judgment will pass over you. This is how salvation comes even today. Well, verse 14 tells us, so this day shall be to you a memorial, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread, and on the first day you shall remove leaven from your houses. For whoever eats leavened bread from the first day until the seventh day, that person shall be cut off from Israel. Unleavened bread was a twofold type. In the Bible, leaven speaks of sin. It's really the perfect picture of sin, in fact. It corrupts by puffing up. Isn't that what sin does in our lives? It plays on our pride. It corrupts us by puffing us up, thinking more of ourselves than we should. And ridding a house of leaven is a picture of us ridding our lives of pride and the evil it produces. And unleavened bread also, of course, speaks of faith, as we've already mentioned. Israel believed that their deliverance was imminent. They were ready to leave at a moment's notice. And a Christian needs that same attitude because, guys, at any moment now, God could call us out of our Egypt and could suddenly call us home to heaven and deliver us from this corrupt world into His glorious kingdom. So be ready. Well, verse 16 says, on the first day, there shall be a holy convocation, and on the seventh day, there shall be a holy convocation for you. No manner of work shall be done on them, but that which everyone must eat, that only may be prepared by you. So you shall observe the feast of the unleavened bread, for on this same day I will have brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore you shall observe this day throughout your generations as an everlasting ordinance. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, you shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month of evening. The Passover was actually on the 14th, and the Feast of Unleavened Bread began on the Passover and lasted for the next 7 days. So actually two feasts, Passover and then the Feast of Unleavened Bread that followed. He says, for 7 days no leaven shall be found in your houses. Since whoever eats what is leaven, that same person shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel. God was serious about this typology. Whether he is a stranger or a native of the land, you shall eat nothing leavened. In all your dwellings, you shall eat unleavened bread. Then Moses called for all the elders of Israel and said to them, pick out and take lambs for yourselves according to your families, and kill the Passover lamb. And you shall take a bunch of hyssop. Now, the blood was always applied, we'll find this throughout the Old Testament, with a hyssop branch. And a hyssop branch was basically a leafy kind of branch that would absorb and retain fluids. And so it was the perfect mode of capturing the blood and then being able to sprinkle it on whatever it was that was to be dedicated. So you were to take a bunch of hyssop, dip it in the blood that is in the basin, and strike the lintel and the two doorposts with the blood that is in the basin. And none of you shall go out of the door of his house until morning. For the Lord will pass through to strike the Egyptians. And when he sees the blood on the lintel and on the two doorposts, the Lord will pass over the door and not allow the destroyer to come into your houses to strike you. And you shall observe this thing as an ordinance for you and your sons forever. It shall come to pass when you come to the land which the Lord will give you, just as he promised, that you shall keep this service. And it shall be when your children say to you, what do you mean by this service? That you shall say, it is the Passover sacrifice of the Lord who passed over the houses of the children of Israel in Egypt when he struck the Egyptians and delivered our households. So the people bowed their heads and worshiped. Then the children of Israel went away and did so, just as the Lord had commanded Moses and Aaron, so they did. And it came to pass at midnight that the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captive who was in the dungeon and all the firstborn of livestock. That night, the destroyer, perhaps an angel, we're not sure, came on every bloodless house in Egypt, on every house where the blood had not been spread on the doorposts and thresholds. That night, the destroyer entered those houses and their firstborn died. Now remember, 7 million people lived in Egypt at that time. That's the population of Metro Atlanta, basically. We're about 6 million people. It's maybe a little bit bigger than Metro Atlanta. But imagine every house in suburban Atlanta losing its firstborn in one night. Imagine the tragedy. Imagine the heartache. That's the scale of death that we're talking about. It was an enormous tragedy. There is some historical evidence for this judgment, by the way. Pharaoh Amenhotep II, who we believe may have been the Pharaoh of the Exodus, he was succeeded by a son, Tutmosis IV, one of the King Tut's, by the way. There's an ancient slab that's engraved with writing that was found near the Great Sphinx there in Egypt. And it records a dream that was received by Tutmosis IV. And in this dream, he tries to legitimize his right to the throne. Now, obviously, if he had been Amenhotep's firstborn, his right to rule would have never been questioned. But because he goes through this elaborate justification for assuming the throne, apparently he was not the firstborn. Evidently, he was a younger brother who somehow, because an older brother perhaps had died, had to justify his claim. The original heir died, and we assume because of this 10th plague. Well, verse 30 tells us, so Pharaoh rose in the night, he and all his servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt. For there was not a house where there was not one dead. Then he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise, go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Also take your flocks and your herds as you have said, and be gone and bless me also. And the Egyptians heard the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, we shall all be dead. So the people took their dough before it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. And now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. They were just so anxious to get the Hebrews out of their hair that they just gave them their treasures and their gold and their silver. There was some peaceful plundering that went on. I suppose you could consider these things back wages for 400 years of bondage and slavery, I would imagine. And also, they will become the materials that will later be used for the construction of the tabernacle. For when we get over to that point, a lot of gold, a lot of silver was needed to build the worship quarters of the Hebrew people. Well, verse 37 tells us, then the children of Israel joined from Ramses to Succoth about 600,000 men on foot besides children. 600,000 men, figure they had wives, most of them did, they had children. Probably 2 to 3 million people, 2 to 3 million Jews came out of Egypt. And a mixed multitude went up with them also, and flocks and herds, a great deal of livestock. Now this mixed multitude included everyone who had jumped on Moses' bandwagon during these 10 plagues. I'm sure there were some Egyptians. who believed, wow, the God of the Hebrews must truly be God. They must have jumped on the bandwagon. They must have believed in God's promise and spread blood on their doorposts and on their thresholds. There were probably slaves from other countries who believed. There may have been Egyptians who had married Hebrews that also believed. And they baked unleavened cakes of the dough which they had brought out of Egypt, for it was not leavened, because they were driven out of Egypt and could not wait, nor had they prepared provisions for themselves. When you work for the Pharaoh, you don't get a lot of time off to go shop for the Exodus. I mean, they were just kind of leaving with what they had. Didn't have too much time to prepare. Verse 40, now the sojourn of the children of Israel who lived in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of the 430 years, notice this, on that very day, it came to pass that all the armies of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. According to verse 41, the Hebrews left Egypt on the exact day that they entered 430 years earlier. They left on the anniversary of Jacob's arrival when he came down with his sons and came down to Egypt. It was God's way of affirming to them that he had never forgotten them that whole time, that he remembered the covenant. He brought them out on the same day that they had entered in. He continues describing the Passover. It is a night of solemn observance to the Lord for bringing them out of the land of Egypt. This is that night of the Lord, a solemn observance for all the children of Israel throughout their generations. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is the ordinance of the Passover. No foreigner shall eat it, but every man's servant who is bought for money, when you have circumcised him, then he may eat it. Remember, circumcision was the mark, the identifying mark of God's people in the Old Testament. A sojourner and a hired servant shall not eat it. In one house it shall be eaten. You shall not carry any of the flesh outside the house, nor shall you break one of its bones. And this is why Jesus' bones were not broken. You remember when he died upon the cross, the Roman soldier came to break his legs, but he saw that he was already dead, and not one bone of Jesus was broken. And the reason is that Jesus was a fulfillment of the Passover lamb. And the Passover lamb, his bones was not to be broken. Well, verse 47 tells us, all the congregation of Israel shall keep it. And when a stranger dwells with you and wants to keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised. And then let him come near and keep it. And he shall be as a native of the land. For no uncircumcised person shall eat it. One law shall be for the native born and for the stranger who dwells among you. Thus all the children of Israel did as the Lord commanded Moses and Aaron, and so they did. And it came to pass on that very same day that the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt according to their armies. Notice that. According to their armies. Now remember, this is a ragtag, undisciplined, unskilled group of slaves. They have zero military training. And yet this is the third time now they are referred to as the armies of the Lord. Evidently, God delivered the Hebrews from the Egyptians and from their bondage in order to fight his battles. And it was vital that they be ready. And God's the same is true for us. The Christian life is a battle. I don't know if you've discovered it yet, but you get delivered out of bondage in order to fight some battles. The same is true for us. It's a struggle to overcome sin. It's a struggle to win over sinners to Christ. And we have to be ready for the battle. We have to be ready for the struggle. God delivers us from bondage. And once he does, he arms us for warfare. He thrusts us into spiritual combat. So expect a battle.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, there's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.